Tab Pals, we're back. I know that that's a dive. We've got PL, producer Lee. It always takes me a moment because PJ's just so obvious. But PL.
Yeah.
We haven't had PM in a really long time.
Well, there's a reason for that.
Just had a baby.
Yeah.
And you had a baby recently.
Yeah.
Everyone's having babies.
4 months ago, yeah.
So. I think it's the Tad Pod. It makes people, you know, want to you know, procreate.
Yeah, we're growing the fan base. You know?
Yes. We're growing it. Yeah, because I can't do it by myself. I need people to have children in order for us to have more Tad Pals. But yeah, we, man, it was an exciting week. I mean, Champions League always throws a lot at you. You kind of think the Premier League was so long ago now with all the action we had, and there was a lot of action midweek and more action going on as Chelsea just started. And for the most part, everyone, I mean, a good Champions League week for most of England. And we'll touch on all that in different ways. Before we get into topics, let's... by the way, congratulations, Mike Carey.
Yeah.
Producer Mike.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. Jude, right?
Jude, yeah.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. So happy for them.
Yeah, and you'll love the Beatles reference, too.
Of course.
So, again, the reviews, thank you guys so much for them. Keep them coming. And the stadium you would most like to go see a game in that you haven't been to. And this one comes this week from Taylor Struck. And he talks about the Atatürk Stadium in Istanbul, Turkey. And he said that's where he... if he could watch a game, he'd go there. The reason being is because the first European match I ever watched was in the 2005 Champions League final between AC Milan and Liverpool. I was in sixth grade at the time, and my dad picked me up early from school and found this match when I got home. And I remember being floored at the pace and precision of these players that these players played with. Before that, I'd watched MLS matches with my father. I even had my dad record the game on an old VHS tape. To rewatch it over and over again. To this day, I'm an AC Milan fan. I'm also following Liverpool and EPL. I love your take on them the past few seasons. Keep up the great work. I haven't been to that one, but I have been there to watch Beşiktaş, who has a new stadium. And when you go to Istanbul, it's kind of amazing. You come off of this. I mean, it's a beautiful, incredible, old. I mean, the bazaars there that are essentially malls for the layman that have been there for thousands of years that still to this day you go in and you know, fresh produce and, you know, leather goods and trinkets and all this stuff. I mean, it is ancient. And you kind of come down this, like, from the airport windy road with this beautiful old ancient wall that frames out the city that obviously had a pragmatic purpose back when people used to come and take things from you. And right, you get a glimpse. And when I was there last time, they were building it. And so it's been complete for a few years now. But they were building the new stadium, and it's kind of cut into the side of this hill. And over the top of the stadium, you see the water and Asia, you know, right across the water. And it was – before it was even erected and finished, it was just kind of a skeleton of a stadium. I could already tell how spectacular it's going to be. And I feel like everything that goes viral – and it's always like – all these amazing Instagram and Twitter, like, you know, follow football accounts, the kind of lifestyle of it. Anytime you see a, like, Harry Potter-esque, like, you know, wizard spell, like, lightning bolt flare, I mean, you think the stadium is on fire. It's insane how passionate and crazy things are. It's almost always Turkey.
Yeah. Well, the Turkish football fans are crazy passionate.
Yeah.
Like, and it's incredible. The atmosphere, I remember watching this on TV as well, the final that Taylor Struck actually mentioned, and the fans just, you could tell that obviously there are AC Milan fans, Liverpool fans, but the kind of the neutral fans, they were almost bringing the atmosphere more than the other fans. Well, very impressive.
And that's one of the most famous Champions League, European games of all time.
Of
I mean, that was the incredible comeback. And I remember I was in Holland. We were watching that. I was with the youth U.S. team, and we were there playing in a tournament. And it was the night before we played Holland, and we were all sitting there around the TV, and a lot of people didn't watch hit the hay or you know, went off and didn't watch the second half.
Oh, well.
I know.
Oops.
Yeah, exactly. They better hope their dad had it on VHS.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a game definitely that would get you hooked on either one of those clubs, a magical night that, Liverpool are trying to reproduce. And
yes.
So they were in Europe and didn't exactly reproduce something as magical in Europe this past week. But the three topics we're going to hit this time, we'll talk Manchester United's Champions League incredible comeback against Juve and leading that into the Manchester Derby this weekend. We're going to do kind of an overall Champions League a review, maybe talk more about Liverpool and that second topic. But first, the Arsenal-Liverpool game. So kind of going back to the one Premier League moment that stuck out. And
Before we start these topics,
yeah, go for
I
it.
Do have to ask you something.
Oh, yes, go.
So
you have a smile on your face already, so I'm a bit worried about this question.
During the weekend, you achieved something which is quite rare on our NBC broadcast. And you,
a correct prediction?
No. Lady Low laughed out loud, and it was one of...
Speaking of magical moments.
Magical moment. And it, for me, I mean, I'm a big fan of your analogies. This one... got to be in the top five. Really? I mean, come on. Tell me
what's
about
so
it.
Funny about it is, so I would imagine the audience, whether it's our Tad Potters or Premier League fans, have now come to realize I lean on the analogy a lot. And it's funny. I think it was kind of in the first few seasons, and it was the edit team that kind of picked up on it. They were like, I mean, Martino, you throw out... And I got tested a couple of times. They were like, are you like writing these down or something? And I'm like, no, my mind's just kind of twisted like that, where something just pops in my head. And I think it was Mike Carey was like, all right, give me an analogy for this. And I just, you know, would throw these things out. The Medusa one, I mean, I haven't thought of you know, Greek mythology in a very, very long time. Wow. You know, whether it's, you know, Icarus flying too close to the sun or any of these things, like they're there kind of parked.
Just and, in there, floating around, bouncing around.
Gathering dust, and eventually, for some reason, it's kind of like that. Now I'm going to use an analogy. You know that game you play with all the toys at the arcade with the hook, the claw that comes down? That's basically impossible. And, like, you always push the button and you're trying to get one, but sometimes you don't get the one you want, and that's when you're successful. I mean, that's kind of what my brain is doing, is it's, like, reaching down in this, like, pit of references. And I don't even know which one it's going to grab. And I'm just hoping it grabs it strong enough so it can get it over to the ledge and drop it in.
Well, for me, this one seemed like the grabber grabbed the exact prize you wanted and dropped it.
Rare as getting the prize in that game, was this analogy. Because I have thrown out a couple that I think fans were like, what did he just say? But the best point of it you led with, which is we get to hear a genuine Rebecca Lowe belly laugh every weekend. Yeah. And it's like, I feel guilty that fans don't get to hear that and see that and understand how hilarious Rebecca is and kind of like be led into our world of banter. And sometimes we do fun like social media stuff, but that was like as authentic Rebecca Lowe
absolutely.
As it gets on air. And it was, it was classic. And Earl too, like looked at me when I started the reference and immediately like swiveled his chair. Like what on earth, where is he going with this? And of course Bex calls me out, which is so fun.
That was great.
That was a lot of fun.
Great moment.
It's, I mean, how many was this? 5 years we've been doing this.
Yeah.
We've been doing this a long time.
Yeah.
May it long continue. So the first game was one, I think, right when the fixtures – I feel like when fixtures are announced, before we really know what we have yet, you know, we have our ideas and we do our preseason predictions. And you got a sense. You've watched preseason, which tells you some things but can mislead you more often than not. But you circle a couple of fixtures early on.
Yeah.
In the first – I would say you kind of look in these, like, quarters, right? You look in, like, the first 10 or so games,
mm-hmm.
and you're thinking, you know, where are we with these teams? And Manchester City, first game of the year for Arsenal, we knew it, and we said it.
Yeah.
It's too early for this.
Absolutely.
This test can't tell you much.
It was almost a free hit for Emery, really, right? If
you
got anything from it, great.
But he didn't really get that, which is amazing. I mean, there were Arsenal fans that were disappointed with that first performance, forgetting that Manchester City, the last time they were there, absolutely dismantled mm-hmm. them, right? So I actually was really encouraged, and I said it on the air during that first game, because I saw what he was trying to do.
Yeah.
And Arlo and I talked about it during the broadcast. You know, the guys in the studio talked about it. It was so clear who he wants them to be with the ball and without the ball. And the thing with Arsenal under Arsene Wenger, in their best years, they were unpredictable on the ball. There was this improvisational, I mean, this beautiful spontaneity about their game that was essentially the gift Arsene Wenger gave to his talented side of saying, I'm not going to tell you how to be beautiful, how to be irresistible, how to thrill. You do it. I'll set you up. I'll pick the right team so it works. And for a long time, and I think that belittles Arsene Wenger slightly, because there was also so much science behind when he first came, you know, nutrition and off the field stuff and scouting and video. So it was more than that.
He did inherit an excellently defensive
team.
Grounding there.
Yes.
And I'm not
that
trying
back
to take
four
anything,
for sure.
I mean, I'm not trying to take anything away from that. But that gave him the opportunity to do what you said.
That's a really good point. They had a defensive stability and also an internal governance, like this band of brothers is kind of what the phrase that comes to mind, but a lot of leaders.
Yeah.
And it was on a bit of autopilot, and he enhanced that and gave us the Invincibles, which was incredible. That was the team that really made me kind of lean Premier League over other leagues that I watched. And I was like, I got to watch when these guys are on. So now we're in a new era, and it's telling me that it's clear if they did this earlier, right? The signs were all there. Mm-hmm. The data was there. The demarcation point, we could see it. It was so obvious, and diminishing returns were happening.
Yeah.
And Arsene didn't want to see it, and you can't blame him. I mean, when you're so in love with something, it's hard for you to see reality, right? That's why people get in bad relationships, because they just want to believe that the way they feel and the love they have is strong enough to overcome the obvious things telling you, no, this isn't working, right? And that was Arsenal and Arsene Wenger. It was tragic because it was such a love story for so long.
Yeah, of course.
And so now they've got a new manager, and this game against Liverpool, for me, was always going to be the time where we checked in and said, is he doing a good job? What do we got? So I think the answer was they are a lot better under Emery than they were under Arsene Wenger. I don't want to say a decade, but because there's some FA Cup wins, there's some really good teams in there. Yeah. There was a time where they were top of the table all the way through Christmas. And, collapsing in disappointing ways, but it's way too early to compare him against a decade. But recently, this is the best they've looked.
Yeah.
Because they just played against a very irresistible side, one of the best attacking groups, and stymied them through most of the game and frustrated them to the point where not only did they start with a different formation they've been playing with recently, where they've been playing very narrow with their top three, almost sometimes playing kind of a strike partnership and letting Mane float. I mean, he's been changing things, even putting Salah at striker, right through the center a lot of times. This time, knowing that Arsenal are more resilient, more compact and organized and willing to defend in a block that cuts down passing lanes and presses you, all these things that he recognized, he prepared for Arsenal with a different strategy that didn't really work all that well.
Giving them a different kind of respect,
Yeah, and in the past, Liverpool wouldn't have changed the way they were going to play against Arsenal. They would have made sure they played the way that they've been the best recently.
Yeah.
And Klopp didn't do that this time. They wanted to target, which made sense, the left side where Kolasinac was coming back, having not played all season. I mean, coming back from injury, and Granit Xhaka obviously wasn't going to play in that role, so he moved in the central position. So they thought, slide Salah out there and isolate him 1v1, kind of like a clear out in basketball. Like crowd one side of the field, overloads, combinations, switch the point of attack, get Salah isolated. Didn't really work for Liverpool, and in the second half, he changed it again and put Salah through the central position and played a 4-2-3-1 with Firmino as an attacking playmaker. And that tells me Emery's strategy worked. If you forced Jurgen Klopp to have to go back to the drawing board at halftime, then the strategy worked. And here's why. It had a lot of attacking players. I mean, he had Mesut Ozil, Lacazette, Aubameyang, Mkhitaryan. We haven't seen those four horsemen. We haven't seen those four attacking players together a lot because it lacks balance. I mean, you are in danger of being top heavy and overloading the attacking side,
which is an Arsene Wenger
issue we saw for years.
Yep.
This is different. He can do it because it's balanced. In that there's discipline with wide players getting back and chasing their marks. But most importantly, two defensive midfielders that one of which they haven't had in a long time that has a role that's about closing down passing lanes, recognizing danger in transition, being tough in a tackle, making players get their heads down by pressing them, and playing one and two touch and understanding their role in the team. And this player is Torreira. And they are a totally different side with him.
Yeah.
And he came in that first game against Manchester City, and I said it. Eventually, this is the guy they need. And Emery needs to figure out quickly, how do you start this guy? And that's taken him a little bit of time. He's brought
him
on.
Was that fitness as well?
Maybe. Yeah, we don't know. Yeah. Maybe he wasn't training great or whatnot. And it could have been a fitness thing because he played him every game but didn't give him 90 minutes and typically brought him in, but they were better every time he brought them in. So even though there was the offside goal that should have counted, where you know, there's two
for
phases.
For Liverpool.
Yeah. Two phases. And listen, that changes the game for sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one goal can't change a narrative. You have to look at the whole thing. And should have counted because the flag initially, there's two phases where the first offside call was on the first ball by Trent Alexander-Arnold, a lovely ball over the top. And Mane's offside at that point.
Yeah.
But doesn't affect the play, doesn't go after the ball, doesn't affect a defender's ability to play the ball. Firmino's the one that goes from an onside position to attack that ball. Mm-hmm. So now you're under phase two, and when the ball is toe-poked over the goalie, Mane's behind it. So you can't raise the flag for that. So we get that now. It's a bad call. But all in all, Liverpool were frustrated.
Yeah.
And I don't care who the team is. If you're frustrating Liverpool, you've had a pretty good day. But when it's Arsenal, who typically in big games, and Liverpool's their arch nemesis because Liverpool likes to press and Arsenal loves to build out of the back. And the combination of those has been catastrophic for Arsene Wenger in the past.
Yeah.
So it was just...
Is that the biggest compliment we can give to Emery's projects?
Is the defensive side of things?
Well, no. Is that he frustrated Jurgen Klopp's men? Like, they managed to...
So far.
That, you know...
Yeah, I think
stand up to the test.
Well, here's the thing. I think that the Chelsea test at Stamford Bridge was a really interesting one. Even though they lost that game, if you remember, that was when Aubameyang couldn't hit the backside of a barn. I mean, he started the season very profligate, missing chances, and now has come on. And now he and Lacazette and
he's
everyone's on fire.
Off the bench now.
So they could have won that game at Stamford Bridge, but that was the first day I thought, whoa, okay, this group, here's the beauty and the biggest compliment we can give them. They have better defensive stability. There's better balance. It's a complete organized group. But they haven't lost any of the attacking ability. Yeah. So there were early signs that they were struggling to click in the attacking side of things. And I thought, well, if you bring defensive stability at the cost of what Arsenal fans love and aren't willing to give up, which is the beauty and the style, right? I mean, that's always been a trademark of an Arsenal team for the last, you know, few decades. Even going back to, you know, 1-0 to the Arsenal. I mean, they always, even if they just 1-0'd you to death, they still had this beauty and this chest out kind of bravado, it's still there. And he hasn't even bought anyone yet.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is kind of the Mislintat, like, director of football strategy that they've needed for a long time, setting Emery up. But Emery gets his first window here in the winter, which I don't know if they do a lot of business, probably not.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know
window.
If Ramsey
it's
leaves that triggers something, but it looks like he's going to at least stay for the year. But man, I mean, give him a window with how stable this group is. I think they've got something special here, something exciting. And I'll just say as a last comment that Arsenal fans are it's almost like they're traumatized. They don't want to believe in something because they've recently been tricked into believing, okay, we're back on track. I think you can believe a bit. Still have patience, though, because there will be another dip. There will be some downs. It's still a project. But this was a big moment, I think a high moment, to say the project's heading in the right direction. And even though they were underwhelmed with the hiring of Emery initially, and I don't want to say everyone, but there were a lot of Arsenal fans underwhelmed.
Yeah.
I think those they've got to be on board by this point.
Yeah. So quickly before we move on, I'm going to ask you one word for a one-word
You know, that's
answer.
Hard for me.
I know. Are Arsenal going to make the top four this season?
Yes. So, you know, I was the only one to have them in preseason in the top four, which surprised me. But it shouldn't be surprising because it is a big project.
Yeah.
So I think, unlike Sir Alex Ferguson and the difficulty replacing him, replacing Arsene Wenger was never going to be as difficult because of the last decade.
Yeah.
So I got him in there. Was that one word?
It wasn't quite one word. But I do think you did show restraint. So
thank you.
Good
yeah,
job.
For me, that's major restraint.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the Liverpool side of things because we didn't learn a ton in this, not a negative way. We didn't learn a lot about them in that Arsenal Liverpool game. They're still the best of the rest.
Yep.
And in my mind, still the team chasing Manchester City the closest, although Chelsea has a case. A blip.
Yeah.
So I'll admit it. I didn't see this game yet. It's still in the DVR. I've watched a lot of other things. I've yet to get to this Liverpool game. You know, still when you look at their group scenario in Champions League, You know, second position, but now this makes their next game on the 28th against PSG in Paris really, really important.
Yes.
Because now they're just a point ahead of PSG. They were a bit lucky PSG Napoli drew.
Yeah, they got very, very lucky there. Yeah.
So you don't want to lose to the team in last place, of course. That's never good for you in a group scenario. But what is this, having watched the game, are you concerned at all? Did you see anything that should worry Liverpool fans?
Well, just to give this a context, so they obviously lost 2-0 at Red Star Belgrade.
Yeah.
So
two first half goals in the first half hour, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So I was watching this game and I managed to catch some of the pregame. And the atmosphere at Red Star Belgrade, you could see the fans were very, very passionate.
Yeah.
And you could tell that, obviously, it's much like at Anfield, when there's a European game, the atmosphere just ramps up to the highest levels.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can't speculate, I don't know. But it just seemed like the Liverpool players started slowly.
Hmm.
They weren't on their game from the kickoff. And got punished.
Yeah. And then you give the stadium a chance to kind of come alive
and intimidate
you a bit.
And, you know, then there was a very good goal. The second goal was a good goal. But at the same time, they just hadn't really kind of recovered and switched on after conceding that first goal. So the second half, they were better. And Mo Salah, I think, hit the woodwork once, at least, maybe twice. Mo Salah seemed to be kind of trying, you know, and finding opportunities. But they just—it was just one of those days where I could tell Jurgen Klopp would have been extremely frustrated with his team to just give themselves a very difficult task from the beginning.
Yeah,
that was the problem, they never really recovered.
I mean, is there an argument for—and a loss to PSG would put this into the highly possible category—is there an argument for it being good if they drop out of Champions League? Now you drop into Europa League, right? So. It's not as if you're out of European competition, but I don't see them taking Europa League as serious, knowing full well they're probably going to finish in the top four. It gives them the opportunity to focus on the title. And this was always one of the – when you did the calculus on can anyone catch this incredible Manchester City team, why I said in my predictions Liverpool are going to win the title, which, again, I think I was the only one to go for that one, was – I see Pep Guardiola's ultimate charge coming to Manchester City being winning the Champions League and leaving a blueprint and a legacy that can be repeated that has the trophies as the foundation, right? And that's the ultimate. They want that Champions League trophy, and Pep has delivered it at every club he's been to. I guess it's you think Manchester City are going to stay. I mean, They're flying through.
They're crushing their group.
They stay in that competition much longer, even if Liverpool somehow find their way out of this group. Could it be a good thing for Liverpool?
Well, what I would say is, if you look back at the last four Premier Leagues, since Leicester winning the league, no European commitment.
Chelsea,
no European commitment. Obviously, City last year.
Yep.
You know, that's they are the anomaly there.
But
it definitely helps. A title charge, not having European football.
Sure.
What I would say is, with the European football dropping down to the Europa League, that gives Jurgen Klopp an opportunity to rotate his squad.
Sure. Keep them sharp, make them happy.
You know, keep the guys sharp.
Lallana, guys that need minutes, that have been hurt for a long time, that are starting to feature more. Shaqiri, who's been good.
Yeah.
Maybe it's games you use Mo Salah to get. You know, he's starting to get in the goals now, and he loves to play. He's kind of one of those guys that you don't want to rest.
Mm.
I remember Alexis was this way when he was flying with Arsenal in some of his best seasons. It was, you know, you don't rest him. He's the type of player you, like, keep going. And even though your eye tells you Salah's still a bit off, the numbers are just where they were last year.
Yeah.
I mean, he started last year a bit shaky as well. Mm. So, yeah, I agree. I think it could be a benefit to Liverpool. And then you have this situation where, especially when you get to the working end of the Premier League season, it's when Champions League starts to get intense and you start to have really important games where you can't rest guys. And it'd just be nice for Klopp to be able to, especially with six-pointers coming against maybe City and these teams that are still in the competition, to have your fresh squad, you know, with 3 or 4 days rest, going against a team that just, you know, maybe even win an extra time or played long, difficult games on the road. It's an advantage. It's a big advantage.
To play devil's advocate to that, though, with one of the things that we talked about with Liverpool is, you know, they had a great starting 11 last season, but their squad maybe wasn't strong enough.
Yeah.
Now after the recent signings they've had, mm-hmm. you know, we're saying now they're one of the stronger squads in the league.
Yeah.
So surely they should be able to cope with a Champions League
yeah.
a campaign and a title challenge.
Yeah, but here's the difference is Manchester City have almost two first teams, mm-hmm. right? There is still very clearly a first Liverpool team.
Yeah.
Right. So Shaqiri, as good as he's been, is not a starting 11 player for Liverpool. Lallana is in that category as well.
And Sturridge is you can kind of
and
say.
Sturridge is in there. Yeah. Right. So like their depth is still backup. Where like, you know, Sané, Sterling, yeah. Bernardo Silva, Mahrez. Well, I mean,
you can name 22 players.
Yeah, these guys are yeah. starting for almost any team in the Premier League and on any given day starting for Manchester City. So, yes, Liverpool are deeper than they've been in the past, but they can't handle the competition like Manchester City. And I'd argue, I think maybe even Chelsea, where like those two teams have some really good players where on any given day they can make a strong argument to be in the 11. And Liverpool aren't there yet where there's players where you're like, I can't believe he's not starting, you know?
So you said that Manchester City, they are their main goal this season, Champions League, really, like for Pep to do what he needs to do. So on the same note, surely for Liverpool and Jurgen Klopp, the title is their goal,
yes.
their 100% goal.
Yeah.
So if you're a Liverpool fan, are you happy with where Klopp is right now with this team?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And I forgive him for getting knocked out of Champions League early, knowing that even though it still stings, they went so close, right? And his inability to get, I mean, he's I don't know how many, he's, what, three or four finals he's brought them to already, I think three.
Three.
And lost them all. So that stings, right? But, like, there's still credit there. It can't be binary, like win finals or, you know, win finals and it's success or lose them and it's a failure. The project is moving forward. The enhancement in the group, there's one signing that's totally changed them in Van Dijk that will be shortlisted for signing of the window, right, mm-hmm. of the year.
Yeah.
They're a better team for reasons that you can immediately link to Jurgen Klopp. So if I'm a Liverpool fan, I'm disappointed because, you know, Anfield European Knights, you know, going back to that Istanbul conversation yeah. we had at the beginning of this, I mean, if it's special to all clubs, we know that. But there's just something about Liverpool in Europe, Anfield, you know, midweek European Knights that just feels a bit, you know, there's only a few clubs where it has that yeah. level of expectation and excitement and magic. So it would be disappointing if they were out of it. But I think if you put a hot light on all of those Liverpool fans' faces and said, which one, it's the league.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's what's crazy about that is it's in a weird way, it's easier to win the Champions League.
Yeah,
and Pep has said
this.
They
made the final last
exactly.
year.
Exactly. So to win a cup competition, I mean, that's why Wigan won FA Cup and got relegated in the same year. To win a cup competition, there's a lot of luck involved. It's draws, it's bounces, it's calls, it's all that. But over 38 games, to be the best, to be above everyone else, you are the best.
Yeah.
And that's hard to do. That's why we rarely see others do it. That's why Leicester were 5,000-1. That's why... that's why the season, you know, when you look at it, almost never. I think only two clubs have repeated, or is it three? Chelsea,
Arsenal, and Manchester United.
Arsenal and Manchester United. Yeah. So three, yeah. So I mean, winning a in Premier League too, one of the harder leagues with more parity. That's what they want, but it's the harder thing to get.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, but because there's luck involved in a cup, you forgive your team for dropping out.
So we've hit the quarterly part of the season, and you already mentioned that you picked Liverpool as your champions.
Yeah.
Seeing City kind of almost improve on last season, can I ask the question?
Do it.
Are you have you changed your mind?
Yeah, am I starting to, yeah, starting yeah. to think that I've made another bad call? Not yet, but I knew Manchester City were going to be as good. And the difference is Liverpool are better than they were last year, but so are other teams. So Manchester City, being as good as they were last year will not accrue as many points, will not get as far as they did last season, even though they're as good, if not better, because there's a even newly promoted sides like Wolves, right? There are groups that are making it more difficult. If you're staying still, you're going backwards, right? But I just always thought Champions League and the improvement in other sides, it was always going to be hard to improve on Manchester City. I mean, you couldn't really, I mean, you can't really think Messi, maybe, like Messi and maybe one other player that could make them better. Mm-hmm. But really, no one was going to make them better. I mean, they were close to perfect.
Yeah, they still scored over 100 goals. And even if they achieved that this season, you know, they haven't really... It was more the drop-off that was a concern, right? That
was the slump, you know, the hangover of winning. And listen, the reason only three teams have repeated is there is a psychological impact. Teams out for you because you got the bulls on your back, reigning champions, you know, new contracts, complacency. It's just hard to do. So even if you're just as good as you were last season, it's statistically harder to win a title if you just won it the season before.
Yeah.
So I'm not ready yet. Okay. I'm sticking by my
Let's
Liverpool
give it another
prediction.
Quarter of the season.
Yeah, it's being chipped away at. It's definitely weakening my resolve. But, you know, speaking of Champions League and City and improvement, Manchester United had if you didn't watch it and you saw the result, you'd say one of the more impressive results this season. I mean, across Europe. I mean, to go there and come back against a team that up until that point hadn't conceded a goal in the competition. You don't come back from Juve there. So
if they had come back with a draw and a point before the game happened, if someone said to Jose Mourinho,
you
can have a point.
Oh, I'd tear your hand off. Yeah. So that just in a headline, you're thinking, wow. Mm. Now, when you watch the game, it has some of the signs of recent games where a bit of a slow start, not as bad in terms of lacking organization or energy. You know, it wasn't one of the first halves that we've seen some terrible ones recently. I mean, the Newcastle one at home and the Bournemouth one. I mean, there's some of the worst 45 minutes we've seen from Manchester United in a very long time, and then comebacks. This one's different. This one wasn't a terrible performance, and the comeback is spectacular. Even if it's late, it's a bit desperate, it's set piecey, right? So it's two set pieces, you know, one in injury time, one just before. It is a smash and grab.
Yes.
But listen, Inter Milan knocked Barcelona out of Champions League on a smash and grab. I mean, you respect smash and grab in that competition, especially when you are going to a place that people don't win games. And so Jose Mourinho deserves credit.
Yep.
So I know it's hard. I know it's hard for me to say that. He absolutely deserves credit.
For the way he set up his team or for substitutions or for combinations?
I mean, substitutions, listen, that's always an easy one because you can say when substitutions score, it's brilliant. You could also say, you know, well, why didn't you start this way? There's a lot of ways to deconstruct this, and your bias can take you one way or the other. But based on the current situation with his players, with the criticism, with their struggles, Jose Mourinho does deserve credit for making adjustments, keeping the group together. Halftime, we don't know, but whatever it is, the second half performance was stronger. Mm-hmm. And going down a goal did not destroy them. You know, they didn't put their heads down and collapse. So you have to let him have some of that. Now it's shared, and it's hard to figure out who gets what, but he gets some of it. Mm-hmm. And the trouble is, here we go again with a bit of a limping on, because this one's really impressive.
Yeah.
So the other ones, I think you can easily look through the result and see past the sizzle and see there isn't much substance behind it. And if you're a director of football and Manchester United don't have one, you'd say, I don't care if we came back at home against a team that shouldn't be beating us here, who's going to be in a relegation battle. That was that first 45 minutes was incredibly troubling.
Yeah.
So no one's there doing that right now. And I just wonder, will the powers that be at Manchester United look at this night in Europe and look at the comeback against Juventus and say, he's turning it around?
Also, they are privy to the insider knowledge that we aren't. You know, the atmosphere in the dressing room, the, you know, the training sessions. They see these kind of things. So, you know, they're obviously, he survived this far, and if he goes through and squeaks through on various results for over this next month, is it one of those things where, you know, that they can only judge him on the results, or can they judge him on what they know that we don't know?
So, yeah, of course. If you're a good, and now they don't have a director of football, but Ed Woodward is the guy in the hot seat pushing things forward in terms of recommendations to owners, to the board. He's the go-between with the playing group, the agents, Jose Mourinho, the coaching staff, and the money decision people, right? So he wants to believe this is a turnaround because it's on him if it isn't.
Yeah.
It's on him because Jose Mourinho was his guy. It's on him because he gave Jose Mourinho a contract extension when no one else in the world would have done it, because history tells you this is about to blow up. So I think there's a little bit of confirmation bias where that Juve result, he'll want to believe and will position it with the powers that be. Hey, give him some time. This thing's turning around. I know that we had some difficulties, but look at where we are on the table. We're gaining ground. 10 out of the last 12 points, you know, achieved. We just had a great. He'll
data
be pushing
he can
that.
Use.
Yes.
Yeah.
So all that data is unemotional, and all of it can be debunked. Because if you're a football guy, if you're watching this with a trained eye, you know that there's still a lot of problems there. And so the Manchester Derby is a massive litmus test. I mean, this, after a great European night where it should be galvanized, the group should be buzzing, you figured out some things. Alexis playing through the center now, which I think creates long-term problems, but for short-term, great. Martial gets to start, and he's been performing really well. He doesn't have to worry about Alexis coming off the bench and knocking him out of the side. He's got to worry about Lukaku coming off the bench and him sliding Alexis over there. Yeah. But at least he knows I'm in the team. He's believing in me. I'm getting my opportunity. Alexis has been better up top. So there are these positives. But Manchester City could just pop this dream bubble above the heads of the Glazers and Ed Woodward with a massive performance. And we saw it the last derby where they could have won.
Yeah.
You know, the done it on Derby Day T-shirts that Jose Mourinho says he wants one of them, and he deserves some some royalties for all the content he helped create. That was a first half where they were getting outplayed, outclassed, and completely demolished. An amazing second half comeback. So much of the narrative that gets put to the decision makers at Manchester United hangs on this derby and the result. And if you look at the way Manchester City are playing now, and that juxtaposition, I mean, compare the two. Go red, blue, in Manchester, even though there's not a ton that separates them in the table, you know, they're both still in Europe, first place, second place. It is remarkable the disparity between these two sides in terms of how Manchester City dominates and entertains, and how cohesive and together and positive that group is versus Paul Pogba, who won't speak to the press because he says, you know, I've been gagged,
yeah.
And Jose saying he'll never wear the armband again. I mean, we've forgotten all of those things.
Polar opposites,
right?
Of those clubs.
So we've forgotten all of those things. Yeah. This will remind everyone, you know, it's kind of like when you get back from your honeymoon, right? This reminds you there's bills in the mailbox and, you know, and they still have the leak in your roof, mm-hmm. and, you know, got to get the kids to school and, you know, one of them's sick. Got all that, like, get back from the honeymoon and, like, oh my gosh, like family life kind of, or get back from vacation, family life kind of jumping back at you. That could happen here to Manchester United. Or if they get a result, and Jose has a knack for mm-hmm. crazy, weird tactical things that no one predicts that he does in games like this, if he gets a result, it further pushes things down the road. And I kind of liken him to the Black Knight and Monty Python's Holy Grail, where, you know, none shall pass.
Yeah.
You know, gets his arm chopped off, his other arm, his legs, and you know, just a flesh wound. He's still fighting. I mean, I feel like that's symbolic of Jose Mourinho's season this year. Is he's had almost every limb severed, and somehow he's still finding a way with his phantom limb to cup his hand to his ear and say, yeah, what's up now?
Yeah.
And by the way, I loved that, I'll say.
Yeah.
This whole, like, disrespecting the Juventus fans and all that, come on, it's a game.
Yeah.
You're supposed to talk crap. There's supposed to be banter. And by the way, he took a lot of crap from everyone in the world recently.
Yeah.
That was an amazing moment for him. Give it to him. Let him go out there and do that. It was great for TV. I'm someone that doesn't like him, but of course I try to convince Manchester United fans, they don't believe me. I am neutral, and I thought that was amazing.
Yeah.
And I was behind him, and I thought, go for it, my man. I mean, stick your hand behind your ear and make everyone shut up in the stadium.
After a result like that, if he doesn't give us something like that, I'm disappointed.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah,
it was brilliant. So I think the last two controversial things with him, you know, the Ianni thing where, you know, he after being taunted twice went over there, and this, he is totally in the right in both scenarios.
Yeah.
And any person would react the way he's reacting when cornered and criticized after the career he's had. Give it to him. Let him have both of those moments, because I think in both of those moments he's not at fault at all. And actually, I go as far as to say I loved it.
Yeah.
And I thought both of them were the side of Mourinho that we do like. And I think universally a lot of people respect and like, even if you're not a fan of his or a fan of his team. That was a great sporting moment.
Yeah, and we're running out of time, but very quickly, you mentioned Mourinho's strange tactics he plays in some of these games. So I am going to push you as to say,
what is it going to be?
Do you have any?
Well, let's list prediction. Some of them. Let's list some of them recently. So there was the couple seasons ago, Herrera man-marking Hazard at Old Trafford successfully. Had a great game. There was McTominay recently in a back three.
Yep.
That was an interesting one.
Yeah. Not sure how successful that was.
No, it wasn't very successful. There is a back six he's done from time to time, playing a back four with wingbacks, which is interesting. I think we may see a Fellaini from the start.
Yeah.
I think we may see a Fellaini, like, false nine, or like kind of like withdrawn, where he plays Pogba and Matic and Fellaini and goes super power, super height, tries to win on set pieces, sits back, tries to relieve pressure through long balls from De Gea to Fellaini. I think that's the big one that would shock people, that in a game like that, he's going to go back to his tried and trusted, like, last-ditch effort guy.
Fellaini has become a big player for him.
Yeah.
And he's very different to almost any option they have. You look at Pogba, would you say he's box-to-box in a way or
well,
not?
Lately he's been playing a little further forward, which he's enjoyed. Ultimately, he is in a 4-3-3, one of the more advanced box-to-box guys. So in a Manchester City system, he's one of the Silvas, right? Mm-hmm. That's what he wants. That's what he was at Juve. But yeah, I think Pogba's going to be asked to drop a bit deeper and be a deeper playmaker. It's just what you worry about with Fellaini is when you have the first thing that Pep Guardiola is going to do is figure out how to exploit that. Mm-hmm. And how he's going to do it is probably bringing Mendy in off of the side, allowing Sterling to stay, or Sané, very wide, and create these triangles with Mendy and Fernandinho and Silva that Fellaini, not be able to handle, which is going to draw Matic out of position, which is going to then create these in-between-the-lines scenarios where the back four are having to play even 1v1, and they struggle, especially when Lindelof's playing out of position on the left center back position. It's what they wanted to do, Pep Guardiola told us preseason against Chelsea, to try to get Jorginho out of that hole. Mm-hmm. And if Fellaini's out there, Pep will make an early tactical adjustment to try and exploit it. The big question, where are we with Lukaku? What's the latest?
I believe he's fit, and he could. I think he's available.
That's the big decision.
Yeah.
So the Alexis thing is working right now, in that it's getting the best out of Alexis, and they're getting results that way. So that'd be big in a Manchester derby to not go Lukaku if he's fit and ready to go.
I mean, I can see by the look on your face all the permutations.
I know, it's wild.
It's going to be a very interesting game.
I just hope. Listen, we always pump these up. And that's, again, one of the things that I'm just, Jose just always upsets me, because we pump up these big games and they end up being good for him, dud for everyone else.
Yeah.
And I think Manchester City are too good for him to be able to do that this time. And listen, to give him credit, it was one of the more thrilling Manchester derbies last time because of him and because of Manchester United. So I just hope we get a game. What we can hope for, the best case scenario, is an early Manchester City goal. And then we'll see how good, again, Manchester United are when they're desperate and they chase a game.
Yeah. that's been their calling card right recently.
Yeah. So we'll see. And then where so the, what are they? 7 points off of City? 9 points? I mean, like, where's it? Pop up a table real quick. Let's see what the implications are. Because obviously it'd do a massive favor for Chelsea, Jose's former club, and Liverpool, Manchester United's biggest rival.
So they are 9 points,
9 points.
Adrift from City right
now. So, I mean, it's not necessarily the gap closer to City, because even six points, I mean, it's just going to be tough. But it crowds everything up at the top. And then, again, we have this amazing scenario that we rarely get at this point in the season with so many clubs, five or six, crowded up there at the top.
It's also important to mention there are three clubs unbeaten right now with City, Chelsea, and Liverpool. Now, City won't want to be that team, the first of those three, to lose that title.
Yeah.
Particularly Pep as well. He plays down all these records and things in the public.
Yeah.
But behind closed doors, we know he's all
we
about...
We saw it.
Yeah. He's all about the records and history and the rest of it. So, yeah.
So we win. Good. I mean, good for us. And listen, a Manchester United win is the better scenario for all the neutrals in terms of, like, keeping parity in it. Jose is entertainment, whether you like watching his teams or this current Manchester United team or not. That is the neutral result that everyone wants. But I'm sure there are people that would love to finally see Pep just absolutely smash Jose Mourinho in the Premier League, which he hasn't been able to do. Yeah, I mean, in the Premier League, Jose still is the most successful guy, right? Like, so between he and Pep, they can go around the world and Pep gets more laudits. He's lionized, he's respected, he's beloved. I mean, in the Premier League, Jose still has him.
For now.
We'll see what happens. But this is a big game. Big game this weekend. Cool game. So yeah, that's it this weekend. So pumped to get back in the studio. Keep the reviews coming and leave Raheem Sterling alone. All right? Because I'm not saying this to Raheem. I'm saying it to you. Stay on your feet. And it wasn't a penalty.